I'm scared of heights, personally. I don't know what you're scared of. I know Charity's scared of spiders, because I was summoned. I thought someone had died. I was like, Seven! Come and deal with this! It was quite big, actually. I did wear gloves, because I'm a bit of a wuss myself. Not that I came across that. I was very much the macho man. I will deal with this spider. But heights, for me, that's the thing that gets me. I don't enjoy heights at all. I've got some really supportive friends, so every now and then they just send me a picture of someone dangling from a height just to give me a heart attack. But a lot of us are scared of things. A lot of us live with a sense of fear that goes beyond just being scared of a certain situation. I think a lot of us live our lives far more out of a place of fear than they ever do out of a place of freedom. In fact, fear is pretty normal and natural. It's inbuilt into your life to be fearful of stuff. Call it evolution, call it the way that you're wired, call it the fall. But all of us, inside us, have got these things that make us fearful, and we live our lives out of that place. Sometimes fear is a natural response. Sometimes fear is the reasonable response. And we read in the passage that on the Friday, the disciples are afraid. The disciples are afraid with good reason. It says this in Matthew 26. The disciples were afraid, and with good reason. And so was Jesus. This says this in Matthew 26. And he went a little beyond them, and he fell on his face and prayed, saying, Father, if it is possible, let this cup pass from me. Yet not as I will, but you will. The disciples were afraid on Friday. They live out of a place of fear. They shut themselves in a room. And how often do we respond out of a place of fear in our lives? I know we want to respond to a place of fear. I was at a conference this week about how we can, as churches, come up with ideas, social enterprises, things that help to grow the church. And people were sharing stories of when they'd had these fantastic ideas and they'd tried to suggest them to people. And they were like, oh, no, we can't do that. Oh, no, we can't do that. We can't do that because of X, Y, Z. We can't do that because the neighbours wouldn't approve. Oh no, we can't do that because that would mean we had to paint something grey and I don't like grey. And we were talking about this and we weren't criticising, we were asking the question, why do people respond like that? Why do people not like change? Why do people want things to be controlled by that? It's simple. It's because it comes out of a place of fear. Danny Silk, who's a writer I really respect, says this, fear and love are enemies. They come from two opposing kingdoms. Fear comes from the devil, who would like nothing more than to keep you permanently disconnected and isolated. But love comes from God, who is always working to heal and restore your connection with him and other people and bring you into a healthy, life-giving relationship. The disciples were afraid. Jesus was afraid. But Jesus does not respond to his situation out of a place of fear. Because Jesus, in the Garden of Gethsemane, when he has every right to be afraid, looks to God and says, your will be done. And that's the choice that we all have in the way that we live our lives. All of us have a choice as to whether or not we live out of a place of fear, trying to control things, trying to stop things changing, trying to say no to more things. We live out of a place of fear where we don't look to make those friends in case we get rejected. We don't put ourselves out there. We're not generous in case that the money runs out. We live out of a place of fear, but Jesus comes before the disciples in this passage that we just read. And he says, you don't need to be afraid anymore. You don't need to be afraid anymore. Do not be afraid. I remember hearing talks like this, and part of me always hears them and I'm like, that's great. Yeah, don't be afraid. That's fine. I'll try and put myself on some more high ledges or something in order to overcome my fear of heights. But if we think Jesus says, don't be afraid, because I will make it all right, you become very disappointed with God. Jesus doesn't say, don't be afraid, because everything's going to be fine. Jesus this morning, unfortunately, doesn't say to you, don't be afraid, because I promise your life will become rosy. Jesus comes to the disciples and says, do not be afraid. These disciples went on to be martyred. These disciples went on to suffer great persecution. But they weren't afraid. Jesus says, do not be afraid, because I am with you. Because I am with you. This morning, you can choose not to live out of a place of fear, not in some vain hope that everything will one day be okay. No, you can choose not to live in a place of fear simply because you know that God walks with you. That regardless of your situation, it might not get better tomorrow, but Jesus walks with you through all of it. Jesus says, you do not need to be afraid anymore because I am with you. Fear is a natural and normal response. But let me tell you, because of Easter Sunday, we are not called to be natural and normal people anymore. We are not called to be natural and normal people anymore because we worship a God who is risen. Jesus says, you do not need to be afraid because I am with you, even to the ends of the age. I don't know what you're facing this week. I don't know what situations you're facing that would make you afraid. I can't promise that all of them are going to turn out okay. But I can promise that Jesus will be with you. And therefore, you do not need to be afraid. You do not need to live out of a place of fear. Self-preservation is another good idea. Self-preservation is another normal and natural response. Now the disciples, I just want to paint this picture because often I'm quite critical of the disciples being wusses, locking themselves in some upper room, but they were under quite a lot of scrutiny. Bearing in mind that these disciples, their leader, Jesus, has just been crucified for insurrection. And on the Roman hit list, they are probably next. It is absolutely understandable that the disciples, having seen Jesus die, would go and lock themselves in a room in order to hide. All of us have got this inbuilt in us. All of us have got self-preservation. Look out for yourself. Look out for number one. Make sure that you protect your own interests, almost regardless of what other people do. It's completely understandable what the disciples did. Jesus was faced with the same choice. Jesus, it says this in Matthew 27, two bandits were crucified with him, one on his right and one on his left. Those who passed by derided him, shaking their heads and saying, you who would destroy the temple and build it in 3 days, save yourself. If you are the Son of God, come down from the cross. They said about him, he saved others, but he cannot save himself. Let him come down from the cross and we will believe in him. Jesus is offered the chance of self-preservation. Jesus is offered the chance to save himself. And all of us have got that opportunity. You can live your life purely for yourself. You can. If you really want to, you can develop quite a selfish attitude that will keep you safe, might make you rich. It might protect you from some of the dangers. You can choose to live your life in this way that only furthers your own interests. Jesus is offered that choice on the cross. And self-preservation is a very natural and normal response to life. And Jesus on that cross, as he looks at you, decides that you are worth dying for. Jesus on that cross is offered a chance to end the agony, to come down from the cross, to save himself, but he doesn't. Why? Because he chose self-sacrifice over self-preservation. What was it that held Jesus on that cross? It was his love for you. It was his love for you. Jesus is hanging there and has every ability to jump down from the cross to prove that he was God to the people who were mocking him. He could have jumped down from the cross and ended the agony, but he chose not to. He chose not to because he loves you. He chose not to because Jesus chose self-sacrifice over self-preservation. Self-preservation is a perfectly natural and normal response, but because of Easter Sunday, we are not called to be normal people anymore. We can learn to live self-sacrificial lives. This is a bit in Luke 17 that always challenges me. He that clings to his life will lose it, but he who lets go of his life will save it. You can choose to live a life of self-sacrifice rather than a life of self-preservation. Now, in the same way that I had to explain that fear and overcoming fear doesn't mean we just assume everything will be okay in the end. It means that God's with you through whatever you go through. In the same way, some Christians over the past have taken this line, he who clings to his life will lose it, but he who lets go of his life will save it. And they've used that and they've done some stupid, they've like beaten themselves up because they think that somehow if they suffer enough, God will love them. If you look back in the past, there were monks who used to have these like weird whipping things. They used to like beat themselves up in terms of to show God somehow that they were serious. It's not what Jesus means here. We as Christians, nowadays, we don't tend to beat ourselves with sticks, though for some reason some people still do. But we do seem to be quite good at becoming very miserable in the hope that then God will see quite how serious we are about him. So we just think, if we're miserable enough, then maybe God will know that we're serious. Just one note, that being miserable is not a fantastic evangelistic tool. If you spend your life looking like you've got the weight of the world on your shoulders and grumpy all the time, not many people are going to look at you and be like, oh, I want what they've got. It doesn't work like that. We as Christians sometimes hear these verses, he that clings to his life will lose it, but he who lets go of his life will save it. And they think, oh, if only we beat ourselves enough, if only we fast for 40 days just to get God's attention, if only we go without, if only we beat ourselves up, maybe then God will listen to us. I don't think that's what Jesus means. Self-sacrifice isn't about beating yourself up. Self-sacrifice is about choosing to live for something bigger than yourself. Choosing to live for something bigger than yourself. It's about a way of being willing to sacrifice your own self-interest in the furtherment for something bigger. God doesn't call you to beat yourself up, but he does call you to seek first his kingdom. God doesn't want you to spend all night praying just because he'll listen to you more at 3 o'clock in the morning, just for the sake of it. But there will be times in your life when you are so passionate about seeking God's kingdom that you will pray through the night. Does that make sense? We don't do these things for the sake of them. We don't do these things just because we think, oh, if we beat ourselves up, God will listen. No. But there are times when we are so caught up in furthering Jesus' kingdom that we are willing to sacrifice these things. Of course I am willing to sacrifice my money because I believe in the kingdom being furthered. Of course I'm willing to sacrifice my time. Of course I'm willing to sacrifice my comfort. Not just because you want to beat yourself up. No, because you have grasped something bigger than yourself. You are willing to live for a kingdom that is greater than your own self-interests. Jesus says, lay down your rights and follow me. Being self-sacrificial on some levels is quite a ridiculous thing to do. If you decide to look out for others ahead of looking out for yourself, who's going to look after you? Especially if you grew up in a family where people didn't have your back. don't have a good support network. You've been taught that you've got to fight for everything that you've got. But I tell you what, living for other people might not be the most comfortable way of living, but it's the fullest way of living. Jesus doesn't promise an easy life, but he does promise us a full life. If you want to live like Jesus, if you want to have that fullness of life, don't look out for things that make you happy. Look out for things that make the people around you happy. If you want to live like Jesus, look for ways to bless others instead of blessing yourself. Look for ways to serve rather than to be served. Look for ways to be a blessing to others rather than just find ways to be blessed yourself. Jesus' way of being the servant looks ridiculous on Friday, but on Easter Sunday, it's the way that wins. He that loses his life really does keep it. On Friday, it looks like self-preservation is a bad way to live. It looks like you've got to look out for yourself or you end up like Jesus hanging on a cross. On Friday, it looks like you've got to put yourself first because Jesus has died. But on Easter Sunday, Jesus' way wins. Jesus' way of being the servant. Jesus' way of forgiveness. Jesus' way of loving his enemies. That way wins. So find ways to benefit others. Look for things in your life where you can bless someone else. I promise you, you'll reap far more than you ever sow. We all like to give. Look for ways to bless others. You will find that you live a full life. And finally, Cynthia, could we have a couple of these? Thank you very much. No, next one. Fear is a liar. Next one. Thank you. That's a good one. Self-preservation doesn't make posters. I quite like that. And the next one, Cynthia. Next one. There we go. The final one is exclusion. Being exclusive is a very natural and normal response. And quite frankly, I think being exclusive of certain people is often a good idea. If I see someone on the street who has a clipboard, you can rest assured I am not staying on that side of the street. I don't care how many cute pictures of pandas you've got hanging around. If I see someone with a clipboard on the street who wants to ask me some questions and ask me to sign up for £8 a month, I am crossing that street, I'm putting my head down. If I've got earphones, they're going in, and I am not stopping for anyone. Sometimes I think that exclusion is a good way to live. I don't know if anyone else does things like this. No, clearly I'm just the only selfish one in the room who doesn't give money to WWF. But that is me, head down, straight ahead. Sometimes exclusion makes a lot of sense practically. If you want to do some of the children's work here at the church, you can't do it unless you have a DBS check. Because we take safeguarding seriously. It makes sense. It's a sensible attitude. If you've got smallpox, I'm probably not inviting you round for dinner. Exclusivity is inbuilt into us. It's a comfortable way of living, to only like the people that like you, to push the other people out on the edge, to see anyone who's not like us as somehow different and to be excluded. But I tell you what, whereas exclusivity is sometimes helpful, as in the case of DBS, be very careful that it does not become the defining attribute of your life. That is a habit that is very difficult to break. The disciples, as Frank read to us, were in a holy huddle in the upper room. They were waiting. Don't mind, Joe. The disciples went up to the upper room. They locked the doors. They got themselves in a holy huddle and they started praying. And it was absolutely right that they were exclusive. It made sense that they were being exclusive. Their lives were on the line. So they put themselves in a holy huddle, took themselves up to an upper room and said, no one else is allowed in. But Jesus had been offered the same opportunity to be exclusive. This is what it says in Luke 23. One of the criminals who were hanged there kept deriding him and saying, Are you not the Messiah? Save yourself and us. But the other one rebuked him, saying, do you not fear God, since you are under the same sentence of condemnation? And we indeed have been condemned justly, for we are getting what we deserve for our deeds. But this man has done nothing wrong. And then, in a bit that messes up so many of our theologies, he said, Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom. Jesus replied, truly I tell you, today you will be with me in paradise. I don't know what your understanding of heaven is. When you picture heaven, I'm sure we've all got different views about what it's like, whether or not there will be football or chocolate or animals, things like this. We could debate it for a long time. But I think we can all agree that heaven goes on for a very long time. Most would say eternity. So Jesus has just met this guy. The guy hanging on the left of him. Both of them in agony. Jesus has just met this guy. And he is given an opportunity to spend eternity with him. There are not many people that I reckon I could spend eternity with. Fortunately, in heaven, then my impatient nature will no longer be there. So I'll be very gracious and happy to spend eternity with all of you. But currently, there are not many people that I can imagine spending eternity with. I mean, Charity's got to put up with me for the rest of her life. But I mean, at least she got till death do us part, didn't she? Whereas eternity, there's no end game at all in that. That just goes on forever and ever. I feel that Jesus has every right to exclude this guy on his left. I feel he has every right to say, to be honest, I've just suffered enough. I'm going to eternity. I probably don't want you there with me. We don't know what this guy did. But we can deduce that he is not the nicest person in the world. He's being crucified essentially for being a thug. This is the kind of guy that you cross over the street in order to avoid. This is a violent criminal. He has a checkered past. And Jesus turns to him. And although he should be exclusive, he's not. Jesus turns to him and says, come on in. Jesus chooses to spend eternity with this guy. We've got the same choice. We've got the same choice. Do we respond like the disciples, getting into a holy huddle and praying in an upper room? Or do we respond like Jesus, welcoming the people that everyone else thinks is beyond the pale? We've all got things in our mind where we think, that is just too bad. That guy hanging on the cross, we don't know what he did. But we've all got things in our mind where we think, yeah, but if he'd have done that, then he wouldn't have made the cut, don't we? Something terrible. You're like, well, God can forgive you if you sin, but God can't forgive you if you're a murderer. For example, we've all got things in our mind where you're like, no, that is beyond the pale. That is not acceptable. We don't know what that guy did who hung beside Jesus. We don't know what his crimes were. We can portray what they might be. We can guess what they might be. But Jesus turns to him and this guy doesn't even apologize. This guy does not have four steps to sorting his life out. This guy on the cross doesn't sober up. He doesn't do 12 steps to freedom. He doesn't get his life back together. This guy doesn't do a discipleship course. He doesn't even say the sinner's prayer as we would like him to. He certainly doesn't get baptized. There are so many reasons why this guy, I think, shouldn't make the cut. He's not good enough, Jesus. And this guy who might have done truly atrocious things, who doesn't even seem to have sorted his life out or even repented, this guy, all he does is turn to Jesus and say, please let me in. And Jesus says yes, where I would have said no. Jesus says yes. Come on in. The first person that Jesus is going to see in paradise on Friday night is a guy with a checkered past. A guy who's messed up so badly. A guy who didn't even seem particularly apologetic. But he turned to Jesus and he said, please. And Jesus met him where he was at. As a church, I cannot emphasize enough that you are welcome here. That anyone is welcome here. And I cannot emphasize enough that if you turn to Jesus and say, please, he will say yes. He will say yes. The drive to exclude people is natural and normal and in some cases probably helpful, but Easter Sunday teaches us that we are not called to be normal anymore. On Friday, it looks like exclusivity is the right way to be. Look after yourself. Put those people who have got bad pasts away from you, else you end up like Jesus on the cross. On Friday, exclusivity wins, but on Sunday, the way of welcome wins. On Sunday, there is a better way of inclusivity, of grace, of knowing that nothing you can do can earn God's love as we hang there guilty, but we look to Jesus and we just say, please, and he says, yes, welcome. To put this into practice, if, like me, you suffer from selfishness and self-interest, find a way to bless people. Volunteer to help. Help at Chatterbox or The Zone. Offer to help at this 50-plus youth group. Offer to put up some teenagers this summer. Offer to put other people ahead of yourself. If you suffer with exclusivity, invite someone round for lunch. Invite someone to your small group that you might not otherwise get on with. Because it is in the act of loving that we overcome fear. It is in the act of dying that we find ourselves living. And it is in the act of accepting others that we accept God himself. Let's pray. God, I thank you that we don't have to live out of a place of fear. We don't have to live out of a place of self-preservation. We don't have to live out of a place of exclusion. Because you live. Because you rose. Because you won. I pray that we would know your love enough that we would not fear. I pray that we would know your love enough that we would be able to put other people ahead of ourselves. And I pray that we would know your love enough that we would be welcoming, even to the people that the world casts aside. In your name we ask. Amen. Amen.